You're listening to the We Are Libertarians Network. Learn more at wearelibertarians.com. Get the Gary Johnson for President podcast and keep up with the campaign at wearelibertarians.com.
Hey, it's Chris. I wanted to take a moment to just briefly touch on Dallas and the killing of police officers. It broke towards the end of the episode. We didn't know the full magnitude of what happened, and obviously it's incredibly tragic. The loss of any life, we talk mostly about police brutality in this. Brutality by police doesn't mean that brutality against police is acceptable. It's my opinion that we're at a tipping point in society, and the discussion about police versus citizens, citizens versus police, will become a much deeper discussion, and the fundamental principle of libertarianism is nonviolence. We don't advocate violence against police. We don't advocate the violence of the state against its citizens. We advocate peace. And with that, I want to play a clip from Martin Luther King that I think advocates this point, and then we will begin the episode.
And so I say to you today that I still stand by nonviolence, and I am still convinced. I'm still convinced that it is the most potent weapon available to the Negro in his struggle for justice in this country. And the other thing is, I'm concerned about a better world. I'm concerned about justice. I'm concerned about brotherhood. I'm concerned about truth. And when one is concerned about that, he can never advocate violence. For through violence, you may murder a murderer, but you can't murder murder. Through violence, you may murder a liar, but you can't establish truth. Through violence, you may murder a hater, but you can't murder hate through violence. Darkness cannot put out darkness. Only light can do that. And I say to you, I've also decided to stick with love. But I know that love is ultimately the only answer to mankind's problems. And I'm going to talk about it everywhere I go. I know it isn't popular to talk about it in some circles today. And I'm not talking about emotional bosh when I talk about love. I'm talking about a strong, demanding love. But I have seen too much hate. I've seen too much hate on the faces of sheriffs in the South. I've seen hate on the faces of too many Klansmen and too many white citizens' counselors in the South to want to hate myself, because every time I see it, I know that it does something to their faces and their personalities. And I say to myself that hate is too great a burden to bear. I have decided to love.
Welcome to We Are Libertarians. I am your host, Chris Spangle. We bring all of the irreverence modern politics deserves. We explain to you what the hell is going on in the world today and how we can fix it by thinking differently. This is a podcast brought to you by the We Are Libertarians Network. We have many other shows. Just go to iTunes and search We Are Libertarians. Please be sure to rate and review us on iTunes. That's how we grow up in the charts. Like us. Now, listen, only rate and review us if you're going to give us 5 stars. Should like us on Facebook, share this episode with friends, and support us financially through PayPal or Patreon at wearelibertarians.com. We are supported by listeners like you, so $1 an episode by pledging $5 a month helps us grow, and we're going to reward you for that very soon. And we are always taking your questions and comments via email at editor@wearelibertarians.com. Greg joins us. Greg, how are you doing?
Good, buddy. How are you?
We've got Creighton Harrington.
Hey, hi. How's it going?
And then we've got Harry.
What's up?
being peculiar as hell over there. What are you doing?
I don't like the camera on me. I'm trying to type in my password, and then the camera's like looking at my screen.
You don't
and
like
possibly my keyboard. It just makes me paranoid.
You don't like to be hacked, do you?
No. No, I do not like being hacked. I swear people like play with me. Like I don't know if they're actually people like doing it in malice, but all my networks get probed by like very weird IP addresses. Some from inside the United States, some outside.
Do you have like Wireshark running 24/7 or something?
You don't?
No, I don't.
What is Wireshark?
Wireshark is a packet sniffing tool. It uses to sniff packets on your network.
It's a network watcher.
That was my nickname in college, packet sniffer.
It's a
like a sugar packet.
It's
or
a
two.
It's a program that you run and it just catches all of the various information going to and from your router. Basically.
Yeah. Or what's happening on this? So like, if you're using like a VPN, if you really want to see if your VPN is actually working and to see if it's not leaking out information at once.
Virtual private network for the non-nerds listening, all two of you.
Yeah. You can run Wireshark to see if you're leaking out things out in like plain text as well.
Well,
you can also use it if you're incredibly paranoid and you think people are watching you be on the computer all the time.
Hairy.
You're only paranoid if you're wrong. But according to my intrusion protection systems, things do I get poked. I don't like being poked.
Oh, I get poked too. By freaking Spangle.
Listen, I blame Greg and Aaron.
No. I didn't get poked by either of them.
Aaron start poking you, Greg?
Out of nowhere, he invoked his white male entitlement and poked the shit out of me.
Like, what is this? Like, what year is it?
Well, once they both poked, I saw Greg make a post about Aaron poking. So
he was
making
poking great again.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And so I poked Greg, and then Greg poked me, so then I poked you, and then I just started poking everybody that was in my little pokes.
What's funny is people think we're talking about poking on Facebook.
I was poking girls that I'm into. I'm poking guys that I don't even like. I'm poking everybody. I'm poking all kinds of ladies and poking all kinds. Well, let's not be aggressive about it. Maybe an unwanted poke every now and then. But Harry, you know what I'm talking about.
Yeah, yeah. I was in a poke war with this one woman on Facebook. I think we got over to 200. I finally just gave up.
No, I win. And I'll tell you why. And I'm so mad about it. And it's Aaron's fault. Aaron ruined it. So I've been in a poke war with my friend Selena.
Mm-hmm.
For years,
mm-hmm.
We got up to 2,337 pokes.
Mm-hmm. Nice. Wow.
And because I had so many pokes, I mm-hmm. just got tired of it, so I started Xing all the pokes, and I accidentally Xed Selena, and it ended the poke war, and I lost. It's Aaron's fault.
Yeah.
So...
Aaron?
Ewert?
Yeah.
I'm coming after you.
If something can be ruined, you can blame it on an Ewert.
Yep. Mm-hmm. We just got a breaking news. We just got a Snapchat from Aaron. He's from Martinsville, which
they just got Snapchat.
Yeah, so it's the Arkansas of Indiana. So it's for West Virginia of Indiana. If you're so inclined to that side of the nation,
it's our little Confederate getaway.
He put mm-hmm. a generator. He has no air conditioning because he buys trucks for $250.
The smart way.
Right. And then drives them around and wrecks them. And then he can't figure out why he has no air conditioning. Well, it's because your truck wasn't... air conditioning in trucks wasn't invented when this truck was made. So he put a generator in the back truck, in the back of the truck. And then he put a window unit in the back window, which I don't know is if it's genius.
Genius.
Or... redneck as hell.
Both. Both.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Aaron's resourceful.
Legacy, but yeah. He adapted and overcome, you know? Just like Todd Young, who... Oh, sorry.
The Marine. Now, see, you two idiots. I'm not talking to Greg. I'm talking to Harry and Creighton. It's already 67. I like to keep my thermostat at a toasty 65 degrees. I'm like Letterman. I like to be on all the time. And I keep it at 65, and Creighton, oh, it got cold, I got goosebumps. And then he turned it off, and it immediately went up a degree.
Said nothing about goosebumps, by the way.
And it's now 67 degrees. It's going to be 69
It actually feels much better.
It feels,
yeah,
even
it
though it's only 2 degrees warmer.
It's
comfortable in here.
Creighton turned it to, we agreed on 68, and then...
That's what I turned it to.
Harry mm-hmm. had to turn it to 69 because he's immature.
Because it's freaking cold.
It's freaking cold. I was going to put it on 72, but you wouldn't like leave me alone.
I would have kicked you out of my fucking house. That thermostat hasn't been over 70 degrees ever.
So what you're saying is you're going to need a new AC unit here soon.
I know.
When the
apartment complex will.
Yeah, that's why I rent.
Or he's going to have fans everywhere, and we're not going to be able to podcast because of the noise.
I can just see the maintenance man. So I was like, you know, I mean, this is all right. We got to fix this, but you got to give this thing a break, man.
Never been turned off.
That has been told to me before, actually. I call them, like, this thing's not working. And they're like, it's because it's a block of ice. Yeah. You have to turn it off. It's 60 degrees outside, and you've got it set at 65. The air conditioning needs hot air outside for it to work. And I said, that's not my problem. I rent, sir. Get me an air conditioner that works.
And be quick about it.
Be quick about it. Or I will call my friend Maya, and she will fix it for me. So, and then they did nothing because it's apartment maintenance. So.
But you've got to turn off. Like, literally, a block of ice probably was forming outside. Like, literally.
No. It was a block of ice.
I bet it was.
Yeah, and it was a block of ice in there.
It's a block of ice in here right now.
It's like, not cold.
It's like, better. It's better because we turned it up.
It's 2 hours, and it's still freaking cold.
Greg.
It's certainly not Baton Rouge.
Okay.
Oh. All right. Oh, wow, nice segue.
Yeah. It's nice. A little more
that
Minnesota.
Was a nice segue.
It was.
I mean, it's brutal. Based on the content of what we're going to talk about, it's not good, but like...
No. But it's making light of a serious situation.
I mean, nice. That was good.
Yeah. Swamp goes, heat is never a light situation.
Oh, I lived in D.C., all right? So you want to talk about swamp heat.
Yeah. Swamp heat.
I lived in the Legion of Doom swamp.
Oh, gosh. Yeah. Today we're going to talk about a pretty serious subject. You know, I hadn't followed it, and then I saw this name popping up, Anton Sterling.
Alton
Sterling popping up, and I just hadn't paid attention to the story, and I really haven't looked into that story because I got to the Minnesota shooting first, where a man was killed by the police for having a broken taillight. And
that isn't actually why he was killed.
No, he was killed because so let's set that story up first, and then we'll talk about the Sterling case because this came first, but. You know, we're going to talk about police killings. 505 people have been killed by police in this calendar year. We are now at July 7th today.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, have a 1,000 people probably killed by police officers. In Louisiana, where the Baton Rouge shooting took place, 38 people have been killed by police officers in 2016. And the vast majority of them are black. So we have, if you listen to episode 160, where we interviewed two gentlemen who had been in prison for 2 decades each, you heard about, it's not just a racial problem, it's a lower class problem. If you're poor in this country, you don't get off scot-free like Hillary Clinton. You get rushed through a system that has zero compassion or dignity for your humanity, and it's because of
the justice system for plebeians,
right? Yeah. And so we have a system of complete injustice. And you watch these two videos, and I'll tell you what: we're now in an era where, you know, this Baton Rouge killing of Sterling was caught by a group that goes around, and their purpose is to not catch police killings. Their purpose is to catch murders. And so the large majority of murders...
Crime in general.
Are black-on-black crime.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And so what they do is they listen to police scanners, and this network of local activists go out, and they film people getting killed.
Yeah, they're trying to scare young people from joining gangs.
Yeah,
and, stuff.
Mm-hmm. And so they make documentaries about how murder happens and how not to let it happen to you and don't go down this path because this could happen to you.
And they're called Stop the Killing, right?
Right.
Yeah. Arthur Reed's their leader.
Yes, Arthur Reed. And there was an interview with him yesterday, July 6th, on Democracy Now! That was interesting to hear why he does what he does. But... They caught, that's one of two videos. There's one video of the Baton Rouge killing that is still being suppressed because the police officers walked over, took the phone without warrant, downloaded the contents, and took the video of the phone. They didn't have a warrant to take the phone of the person videoing the crime. They just took it. And now civil libertarians essentially are trying to get that video back and get that video released. But there are two videos I personally have not seen those two videos. I just didn't get a chance before the show today, but I did get a chance to watch the Minnesota shooting, and I will play a little bit of that because I think it's important to hear. But we continue to have an epidemic of police killing mainly black young men.
Every 2 days, someone between the ages of, I think it's 18 and 43 dies, mm-hmm. African-American male.
African-American male every 2 days shot by a police officer?
Yeah. By a police officer.
Yes.
Okay, repeat that.
Every 2 days, a African-American male between the ages of 18 and 43 is killed by an officer of the law.
That is stunning.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely stunning. So, we'll get to the Black Lives Matter stuff in a little bit because, you know, if you want to know, in my humble opinion, how the Nazis can systematically kill off the Jews, take a look at Fox News today. You know, take a look at your Uncle Frank's Facebook page. You know, it's on my Facebook page too. You post the video of a man being killed by a police officer and someone immediately starts posting his criminal record. As if that means that he's a capital criminal, that he was to be put to death by the state.
This whole thing jumped the shark with Eric Garner for me. Yeah. Like the minute Eric Garner happened, like in the reaction of people to that,
yeah,
immediately that was the moment I was like, this is an issue where there is no middle ground on this.
This is about you respect humanity or you don't.
Yeah,
right.
It isn't about race. It isn't about your bullshit politics. It isn't about your Fox News talking points. It isn't about the Al Sharptons of the world trying to run games. This is about a system that is killing people.
Mm-hmm.
And you either
murdering people.
You murdering people. And you either support it or you don't.
There is no excuse for it. There is no, this guy was a bad apple. This guy was, he had a criminal record. He was doing drugs. He resisted. None of that stuff is an argument. You either support the unnecessary, unjustified murder of an individual because of whatever trivial reason the cop can give you. You either support that or you don't.
Yeah.
There is no, you're not kind of pregnant. You don't almost get raped. This is you either support this or you don't.
Yep.
So yesterday, July 6th, a man named Ramsey Ortega started his 4-year prison sentence. He was the man that filmed the death of Eric Garner. The days in prison that he will serve are the only days in prison that anyone from that incident will serve.
Yeah.
And it is on drug and gun charges. And you don't think that that was accelerated because he was videotaping the state, you know? It's outrageous.
Watching the people watching him?
Right.
Yeah.
And he was, you know, they patted him down, and they found guns, they found, you know, and I had a libertarian argue with me saying, well, he didn't go to jail because he videotaped. He went to jail because he had guns and drugs. I was like, and?
Yeah.
How about we come over to your house, dumbass?
Yeah, but he's just in New York. If he would have been up in Vermont, cops would have been like, oh, you have drugs, you have some weed, and some guns. Have a happy day in Vermont.
Right.
Keep it here.
Yeah.
Right. So let's start with the Minnesota shooting. Give us the facts of what happened there, Greg.
All right. So the guy's name is Philando Castile. He's 32, and he was shot. He was pulled over and ended up being shot by the police officer. He was pulled over for a broken taillight, like you said.
Mm-hmm.
And then what actually caused this to go viral and all over the internet was, one, already what had happened in Baton Rouge. And then, two, his girlfriend got on Facebook, and Facebook lived the thing.
Mm-hmm.
And then Facebook initially, you know, flagged the video for graphic content and then allowed it to go back up. But the thing we don't know is we don't get video of the actual shooting. All we see is the aftermath. And so I actually got some of the dialogue and from the girlfriend. And so pretty much the debate's going to go around what was said. And so she starts saying he let the officer know that he had a firearm and he was reaching for his wallet, and the officer just shot him in his arm.
Let's actually play the audio for people, because I think that's more powerful. I think
way more.
You listen to her tone of voice. I don't think it's set in for her initially what has happened, because she's initially calm. Listen, once the officer starts talking, he's the faraway voice. Listen to his tone of voice, because I think it's telling to hear his state of mind.
Stay with me. We got pulled over for a busted tail light in the back. And the police he's covered. He killed my boyfriend. What? He's licensed to carry. Oh. He was trying to get out his ID and his wallet out his pocket, and he let the officer know that he had a firearm and he was reaching for his wallet.
Now, the groaning in the background is Castile. He is moving and writhing in pain. And as she is narrating, the police officer is probably back at his car. He's not in the window. And at a certain point, very, very soon in the video, she's talking, you know, right into the camera. In the background is the boyfriend in the passenger seat. And at a certain point, you just hear him stop making noise, stop moving. And it's very apparent that he's probably lost so much blood. I mean, his arm, he was clearly shot into his right arm, into his torso, around his chest and stomach area. There's a tremendous amount of blood on his white shirt, on that portion of the shirt. And we continue with his... Do you know what his girlfriend's name was?
I do not, sorry. Okay.
And the officer just shot him in his arm. We're waiting for a back. I will, sir. No worries. I will.
This is the officer.
He just shot his arm off. We got
the officer. I'm gonna rewind it a little bit because the officer is the one that uses the profanity.
So just shot him in his arm. We're waiting for a back. I will, sir. No worries. I will. He just shot his arm off. We got pulled over on Larpiner.
I told him not to reach for it. I told him to get his hand out.
You told him to get his ID, sir, and his driver's license. Oh, my God. Please don't tell me he's dead.
He stopped moving at this point.
Please don't tell me my boyfriend just went like that.
Just keep your hands where they are, please.
Yes, I will, sir. I'll keep my hands where they are. Please don't tell me this, Lord. Please, Jesus, don't tell me that he's gone. Please don't tell me that he's gone. Please, officer, don't tell me that you just did this to him. You shot 4 bullets into him, sir. He was just getting his license and registration, sir.
Get the female passenger out.
Other police officers start pulling up now.
Let me see your hands. Exit now.
They order her out of the car.
Keep them up.
Where's my daughter? You got my daughter?
Face away from me and walk backwards.
Her daughter was in the car during the shooting, by the way.
Keep walking.
Keep walking. Keep walking.
Now three officers ordering her to keep walking. She keeps the camera rolling.
Get on your knees.
She's now put on her knees as though she's committed some criminal act. She's now cuffed as though she's committed a crime.
Ma'am, you're just being detained right now until we get this all sorted out, okay?
Now, in fairness to the police officers... They normally would, in a situation like this, they would detain the girlfriend because, obviously, the police officer is the one that just shot her boyfriend. And in a domestic situation, for instance, you know, you go into a domestic violence situation, he's been beating the crap out of her, but the second you put your hands on him, she goes fight or flight on the cops. And so you have to detain both parties. So that is why she is detained, but it is of note that she is detained and put on the ground face down. Her camera is lying on the ground next to her. At one point, a cop picks it up, she says, and throws it.
Oh, Facebook, please don't tell me. Lord Jesus, please don't tell me.
First here.
Okay, please. No, please don't tell me my boyfriend. No. Here, take it off my hand. Please don't tell me he's gone. Please, Jesus, no! Please, no, don't let him be go, Lord.
Police officer. She's explaining at this point. Then she realizes, this is Lavish Reynolds, and she realizes that he's gone, and she loses it again, and the daughter comes over to comfort her. The daughter sounds like she's somewhere between 5 and 10. Obviously a tragic situation. I mean, just to hear it, let alone to see it, to watch a man die, you know, and you want to hate the officer, but you hear in that video his state of mind was absolutely over the top, frantic. You know, she is sitting there talking on Facebook, and he doesn't even recognize it. He's so gone mentally and so overwhelmed in that moment that she's sitting there doing a Facebook broadcast, and the police officer never even realizes it. You know, so in this situation, she, you know, she is telling Facebook that he had a gun, he had a permit to carry, he told the officer that. He reached for his
which is 100% what you're supposed to do when the officer walks up to the window. You're supposed to say, "Officer, I have a permit to carry and I have a gun in the vehicle."
Right.
That's the first thing that's supposed to be out of your mouth.
He said license and registration. He went to pull for his license and registration, which were in the wallet, and that's when he was shot. And if you look at the, you know, just to do a little forensics work, because I watched a lot of Law and Order here. And you see his arm is crooked, like it was leaning over to his side. But obviously, just a tragic situation, you know. It's not just for the family, but also, I mean, you hear the trauma in the officer's voice, too. You know, so you have to wonder what leads up to this sort of situation. And what is the psychology of an officer that when a young black male reaches into his pants to get his wallet, why is his first instinct to shoot? You know, and
right. They're trained this way. Mm-hmm. It's training.
But
that's still no freaking excuse.
Right.
That's no excuse.
It's not an excuse.
How many times I see that at gun stores where I've watched someone come in like, hey, I need a holster for this new gun, and they pull it out of their waistband, hit sweep everyone with their freaking barrel and drop it on the counter, and I've never once seen that person down.
It is not an excuse. I'm saying that this is they are trained to react this way.
Yeah. Sorry, yeah.
This is like they are trained to treat every single possible instance of
as life and death.
Yeah, like that's just how they are trained. That's why they kill mm-hmm. dogs. That's why they open a door and they see a little freaking chihuahua and they shoot it in the face.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Like that's because they are trained to act that way. And it goes into, that's why it's not a problem of a few bad apples. It's a systemic problem.
Yep.
Because they are trained to react this way to these kinds of situations. And if I can go to a gun store mm-hmm. and I can get a normal gun safety class and I can, you know how to handle a weapon and mm-hmm. I can deal with all of these people, mm-hmm. you know, I can live in a world where these people around me have these deadly weapons. And I know not to react in such a way to think that my life is in danger every single step of the way. It's because, like, I have appropriate training to this. Cops are in this situation where they think that, like, everybody's out to kill them
right.
and all this kind of stuff. And that comes, you know, there's plenty of reasons why we
can
argue.
He has the state permit that says he knows what he's doing.
The license to kill.
Right.
Yeah.
No, that's absolutely what it is.
I'm saying that... The man that was killed had the license, license, you know.
Doesn't matter. The cops are they literally like this. Like the training is such that they are like look at it, like think about it. It's the old argument. Whenever you have a hammer, every problem looks like a nail.
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
Like
mm-hmm.
if you have this training to react in such a way that anybody who even looks at you crossways is probably trying to shoot you, and you have SWAT teams that have literally tanks. Like yes. MRAPs,
but they're just
on
holding
the street
them for the military.
Like these, like they're you're not when you are when you and this is like goes into the Radley Balco angle. Like when yeah. you have a warrior cop, when your cops are literally soldiers on the streets,
mm-hmm. Roman occupiers,
they are going to look at situations as a soldier would look at them because that's how they're trained to look at them.
Yeah,
and what's that say about us that we train our into the individuals who are a civilian protection force? In order to, you know, protect the individuals within the society and then also maintain the public order.
It says that we're scared as hell yep. of everything.
Everything yep. scares us. Everything's worst case scenario. Everything
everyone
is
thinks
mm-hmm.
that
ISIS. Everything's
thinks right. that it's still 1991 mm-hmm. and that we are the most violent year. Like, overall, violence is going down.
It's
incredibly.
It's the lowest it's ever been in the history of mankind.
Yes.
And, yeah. I mean, those are statistics that you can't argue with. And the problem is that, like, with when it comes to this is we have a problem of training on the part of police officers where they must react to every situation as if it is the last time they'll ever be on the street.
Sure.
And then there is the reaction to their overreaction is, well, we can't treat them as if they've committed anything wrong, so they have a double standard of the law, yeah. Which just it's a cycle. It perpetuates the other.
It compounds and grows until you create this mindset.
We have a 2-hour lecture that Radley Balco gave at IU to our friend Suzanne Schaefer that we recorded, and we'll post that in the show notes. So if you go to WeAreLibertarians.com,
the book's The Rise of the Warrior Cop.
Yeah, he wrote a book about it, and he gives a lot of facts in there. You know, and he just says it's like, the expectation has now become that it doesn't matter who the cop kills as long as he comes back to the precinct at the end of the day.
Yep.
His life is more valuable than the lives of anybody. You know, in this situation, he just started shooting. I just watched the Sterling.
He reacted. I mean, it was. Yeah. I don't even think he had a conscious thought or a process. It was a conditioned response to a stimulus.
It was fight or flight.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
You know, as white guys, and that's why we asked Harry to be here, because Harry is a black guy. He is our chief black correspondent.
That might be racist. Yeah, he just indirectly called you token.
No, but I think it's important that we have on somebody who has experience as a black man. I just have that one weekend in Tulsa that I can
in
go
Tulsa,
to. Right?
But rhinestone cowboy. Yeah, right.
That one weekend in Tulsa, what'd you do?
You and Nick Taylor got weird.
But, you know, I don't have experience as a black man, and I don't have experience of what it's like to interact society as a black man. You know, Harry today walked into a Panera Bread, and what was their special, Harry?
Just started their new watermelon salad.
And you know that when Harry walked in and they have to pitch the watermelon salad, watermelon salad... The kid behind the register saw Harry walk in and didn't think about Harry like he'd think about me.
Mm-hmm.
What happened when they offered you the watermelon salad, Harry?
When I first walked up, there's two white people up there ready to, like...
we call them crackers.
Yeah, to assist me.
Honkies.
And once the guy said, like, would you like to try the new watermelon salad? The other girl that was standing next to him just turned around and just started walking back to the kitchen.
Right. Yeah.
Racism insurance.
Please come here right now. Nope.
And I just stood there and said, yeah, I would like a watermelon salad. I love watermelon.
Oh. I mean, when you got here, Harry, Creighton wouldn't even talk to you.
I know.
Whatever. Yeah. You guys are... Whatever.
Providing accurate commentary on your inherent racism.
Well, you wouldn't know because you weren't freaking here. Y'all were late.
I pulled up. Harry's in his car doing something. Creighton's like, don't make eye contact. Don't make eye contact. Look down at the ground. Look down at the ground. Sitting on a tailgate.
Listen, I'm just saying... Harry is taking this the right way. He's paranoid as fuck. He was videotaping me in the parking lot as I pulled in. Well, he's got his camera rolling at all times.
He also suggested breaking into your place.
Well, I also recommend if you are going to videotape the police, use something that's streaming. Don't have something that will store onto the device because stuff will happen. So like Bambuser or using like Facebook Live or Periscope, so it will go out to the cloud away from use your data connection for that.
Are you trying to say agents of the law might improperly dispose of evidence that could condemn them?
Yeah. Have and will. Luckily,
I mean,
they do kill people. Yeah, they do shoot people. But luckily, a lot of them are really bad at data deletion. They're really bad at it, so a lot of it can be recovered.
A lot of law enforcement agencies now, and there was a law that was passed here in Indiana, and I think it might have actually not passed. I think it might have gotten defeated, where they wanted to... allow warrantless you get pulled over.
Yeah,
the cop can walk up, put your phone into a cradle, and download all of the contents of your phone, never seeing a judge. And and it was dangerously close to passing. I don't know if it passed or not here in Indiana, but it may have been passed in your state.
Yeah, but like even some of them will still use it like as a test. So they just bring it out and just like freaking use it. That's why, like, you've got like people who love Android phones. I like my Android phone too, But if you root this thing, you get inside its root, you've got to make sure you put all the protections back on the device and make sure you encrypt it, because once that thing, so when you're using the USB port, the micro USB port inside of here, once that gets hooked up to a computer, you got to make sure it's got to be trusted inside. And right. if it's got to be trusted inside, you have to pass your encryption. And if it breaks your encryption, make sure like they can't break it. Don't use biometric. Biometrics is not going to help you, because they can take your hand and put your hand right on it and break that. Don't use a key pattern, because most people use a basic key pattern. Don't use a PIN, because most people only really use like 10 different PIN numbers, just when it's four numbers. Use a passcode. Yes, it's annoying. Yes, it sucks. Is these things inherently secure? Yeah, but if you want to keep people out of it, that's what you got to do.
It's better than having your shit memes all over the internet.
Right.
Yeah. You know, I pretend.
God knows what the internet would see if Greg's phone got commandeered by the cops.
I have some killer ass shots on here. I'm just saying.
It would perfectly coincide with
they're
the
me, but you know,
nothing but poorly photoshopped memes that never made the wall chat. Yeah.
No one has more selfies of their nipple than Chris Spangler. I can verify that.
Listen, I am free the nipple.
Free the nipple.
I am Nipple Lives Matter.
Tits on fleek.
Listen, if our friend Mel is going to post pictures of her friends' chests, I'm going to post pictures of my chest in there.
Mm-hmm.
So
equality,
because that totally makes sense.
Guy chest, yeah. Guy chest. We don't get girl chest. We get guy chest. Yeah. So could you please stop eating Domino's pizza while we're
here?
Do you have any more left over there? Because I want one.
Nope.
You ate the whole pizza
in the first 20 minutes of the podcast.
I was hungry.
Those 27-inch pythons need fuel.
This literally in 20 minutes he ate a large pizza.
It's a medium pizza.
It's a large.
Either
pizza.
Either way, you're fat and selfish.
It's a large pizza.
Like me.
I need calories, but, yo.
Hey, before the show, Spangle did smash like two whole cantaloupes.
Yeah. I smashed a whole cantaloupe. It was two halves.
Two whole cantaloupes.
He had a whole cantaloupe, and he was late because he was being overly selective with meat at Kroger.
Listen, I was late.
He was looking for that vegan meat.
That's true.
I was running behind because I had to go help a Hooters girl with her Facebook page.
God.
And then
the
I had
meat.
To go to Taco Bell.
Your giving knows no bounds.
And then I'm a very giving and thorough. I'm generous and thorough, okay? Yeah. When a Hooters girl says, I need help with my Facebook.
And here I am, White Knight.
I am a professional. Then I had to go and smash a couple bean burritos, and while I was driving home, I was like, you know what? I got 15 minutes to get there. I better go in and check if they have meat specials at Kroger.
The Hispanics love Chris Spangle. He eats their burritos.
Love bean burritos. I go and I get two bean burritos and a cheesy gordita crunch. Hashtag I love Hispanics.
Tear down that wall.
So, Harry, you're black.
Yeah.
I mean, have
that's not funny.
And I carry guns. Yes.
Yes. So,
and he likes watermelon salad.
So when you don't tempt me, it's like shave and a haircut, fried chicken. Like I'm black, and then you mentioned watermelon, and I was like, don't say fried.
We need to change chicken. The about section of our podcast
what
too.
Was that?
He's just trying to outrace.
It's okay. We have a black friend.
Hey, all I did was repeat what he said a minute ago.
He did. He had a watermelon salad. It's okay. We can all. It's okay.
We are libertarians. Brought to you by Jordan's Fish and Chicken.
I will not be.
They do have some fire chicken though.
I will not be sending this podcast to Mark Lamont Hill.
Yeah.
So Harry, as a black man, that's not funny. That's a factual statement. As a black man, have you been pulled over driving while black?
Yes.
What are some of the instances? I imagine there are multiple.
I used to work up in this place of called Carmel. I used to get pulled over quite frequently driving into Carmel, especially when I leave at night or come in the day. The only car I never got pulled over in going into Carmel or Carmel into was my Toyota pickup truck.
Mm-hmm.
So the huge redneck edition pickup trucks had the lift
like the
kit.
Ones ISIS has?
Yeah. I had the massive lift kit on it. It was black. It had rust on
it. It was a
on
Jason
it,
Aldean
big, massive
one.
Bumper yeah. on it, you know. And I would blare country out of it, and I would, like, ride ghost. I would sit back in there so you really couldn't see me, so all you heard was country music.
All you saw was the never mind.
The country music, the Dale Earnhardt the Jr. license plate, vanity plate up front, and my license plate on the back window, and the tow hitch, and the big tow hitch. In the back.
You were like Charlie Pride or Cowboy Troy before it was cool.
It was also the extra long bed edition, so I could put an 8-foot...
six grills.
Yeah. Fit all six of my grills in the back.
Fit all the grills.
True story, I was in high school and I was driving through Carmel with my cousin who lived in Carmel. Mm-hmm. And we saw a car pulled over, and like we saw that, we were driving, and he was like just talking about how racist the police were there. And he said, if you see one cop car, you know it's a white person. If you see two cop cars, you know it's a black person.
Mm-hmm.
We go over the hill, there's three cop cars, and it was a Hispanic. So, Carmel has a...
Well, there were more people in the car.
Yeah. I was, I used to work in catering. Stop it. It used to be like most of the Mexicans, the Hondurans, who would come up there and work. It's okay. You're like, hey, they got late. Why they're late? They've probably been pulled over by Carmel PD on the way up here.
Yeah.
I was pulled over by 300ZX. I was pulled over by Neon. Pulled over in every
vehicle. A Dodge Neon?
Yeah, Dodge Neon. What?
Well, I can't believe they pulled
the most winningest Dodge chassis in racing history.
You can't fit any grills in that.
Oh, sorry. But even my wife Lacey, who got pulled over going up into Carmel, a white woman got pulled over. Of course, she was driving a 09 Focus with all tinted windows, coming up into Carmel like at 2 a.m.
Did it have an eyebrow that said Focus?
Yeah.
Driving while windows black.
Right, yeah. Well, they pulled her over. Like, her stop was like amazed me, because that made no sense how that went down. Like, she had this nice, calm, easy, like, stop. And then it was like afterwards, the cop, like, kind of like in passing, hey, you got any weapons in the car? Yeah, it's been in the glove box the entire time I've been talking to you. So the cop was like, all right, well, brings her out of the car, didn't even handcuff her, sets her down, pulls the gun out, unloads it.
Would you like a lemonade?
Yeah.
I'm sorry to inconvenience you, ma'am. But
I am so not threatened by you. Would you like me to have a pizza delivered from Domino's?
It goes to like most of the whole stop and then freaking ask about it. And she finally just offers it. Oh, yeah, it's been here the entire time.
Is that the first question you get asked?
Oh, yeah, usually. Yeah,
yep,
usually.
Really?
Yeah, but I have so many weapons in the car, I usually look the cop in the face like, you really don't want to ask me that question.
Well, then I'm sure that helps, right?
Oh, yeah, because it's funny to me, because I was like, yeah, I've got nunchucks, I've got some size, I've got a bow staff.
Freaking Harry's like, you see that red dot on your chest?
Don't ask me that question, because I will go full LARP on you.
I have a LARPing sword.
Let me ask you this. Have you ever pulled over somebody that's been to Porkfest?
I have weapons only Pineapple can dream of. So,
and then what they constitute as an armament, because technically I have encryption devices, which are regulated as armaments, but that's besides the point. But like, I have been
I'm a weapon of mass destruction, but anyway, so
this is totally the kind of thing that Harry would say.
I know. Well, have you heard of Raspberry Pi? It's basically a tactical nuke I carry in my pocket.
Listen, I will have you know I killed 3 servers with my Raspberry Pi.
But there's one time I did get pulled over by the police with my gun. I had my Glock on my hip. I'm out. I'm going to my friend's house. I'm in my my rotary, and I get on the highway. I'm going like I'm flying, and I get passed by this Dodge Charger doing about like 80, right? And it's like going. I'm right behind it. I'm like, we're whipping and we're going in between traffic. Like I've went from the Lawrence all the way over to what was like past Meridian Street. We were flying through this construction zone, and then all of a sudden, right, I'm just sticking with me the entire time. He slams on his brakes. I doffed in the electric one because he just slams on his brakes. I thought he was brake checking me, and then boom, the lights turned on. It's a cop. I was like, oh shit. So I pull over to the side of the road. Of course, start recording on my cell phone. Put it on the dash,
mm-hmm.
I get ready to wait on the left hand side, wait for the cop to come up to me. Doesn't come to the left hand side, comes to the right hand side. Of course, I am black, so the first thing I do when I get pulled over is I turn on all the lights inside the car, every unnecessary light.
Hmm.
Radio's off.
Why is that?
So they can see inside, so they can see my black ass.
Yeah, so there's like. They can't say, oh, well, I thought there was a shadow of a gun. Or That makes total sense to me.
Yeah, so I'm
picturing you just stripping buck naked and laying like the Vesuvian like, man to make sure that they're not threatened whatsoever. Like, doing a T. Like, I have a concealed permit.
And then when the cop comes on the right hand side, I was like, come on, window. If you roll down, please roll down.
You know, because like, that'd be the time the window doesn't roll down. I've got to tell them, hey, that doesn't work.
It's a trap.
Yeah. So I roll it down, and we're talking, you know, we'll go through this door, like, you know. Because he knows I've been following him since Lawrence. He's got to know I've been following him. So, like, I don't know what he's going to do because, like, he's got me dead to rights for speeding from his, you know, freaking road pirate. And then he asked him,
did you call him that?
They're all road pirates.
Yeah, I almost did, but he, we're talking, and then he wants, like, license, and, you know, he wants my license. And it's like, I hand him my registration, and he goes, like, well, where's your license? It's like, I don't want to give you my license right now because I have my gun on my hip, my permits in the back, my back, in my right butt cheek pocket with my license and the gun permits right there. I was like, all right, well, just give that to me. The gun is also on my right hand side, and I don't want to put my hand over. Well, just don't go for the gun. Do you not understand? It's on my right hip. My right butt cheek has my is where my wallet's at. I don't want to go over there. Mm-hmm. You'll be fine. Just don't go for the gun. How could I not go? It's in the same area.
Right.
You know? And I'm freaking out, like, because, like, this is how I'm going to go. This is how I'm freaking going to die. I'm going to get shot here on the side
of
the road.
So it's just a legitimate fear for you.
Yeah. Even coming over here today when I got my gun in my pocket, I said to myself, like, man, do I even want to carry this thing right now? I love my gun, and I want to be, like, personal protection, but, like, no, having this thing on it that's supposed to protect me is going to get me shot.
Which is such a commentary that something for self-protection in our society today is considered a threat against the force responsible for protecting you.
The state.
Right.
They're,
look at that. And isn't the irony in that absolutely incredible?
It's not an irony, because the entire history of this country, from the second black men hit this continent, the state has been trying to kill black men and has systematically has institutionalized racism, and we've been chipping away at that racism. And it's not like this is a new phenomenon.
It's clear. Yeah. It's important to make the point. It's the state that has primarily been the person who's doing this.
And
it's not like,
and it is a state that we as voters have voted in.
And it's not that's not to say that, you know, average private people haven't had a role to play in, like, racism in American history. But you do have to recognize that there is something to be said about the fact that Jim Crow laws were laws.
Right.
Yes. And that slavery was a legal system. Mm-hmm. Like, these things were state sanctioned.
What is the anatomy of the state? The state, a government, a federal, a local, a state government, is force.
It's the will of the people.
You have
turned into force.
Force. You have zero. You will either be bankrupt or robbed of your freedom through monetarily or through jail if you do not comply.
No, it's death. Yeah. Everything is death. If you don't have money to buy food with, you're dead. Yeah. If you don't have the ability to do business, you're dead.
Yeah.
Everything is backed up by you're dead. You do what we say or you're dead.
If you produce,
it's that simple.
If say you're a subsistence farmer and you just wanted to be an isolationist and did it on your own property, you still would have to have money to pay your property taxes because you're leasing it from the government. And two, you would also have to make sure they didn't consider the production of your crop and the lack of your access or participation in the economy. The depression law. That you were adversely affecting crop prices by not participating in creating demand. There's no escaping it.
We don't own property in this country. Like, you don't have ownership of property. You have permission to use property.
Yeah. Yep.
Like, we can say on paper that you own property because, oh, this is my land, it's on the deed. But when the push comes to shove,
stop paying your property taxes.
Yeah, if you don't pay your property tax, they're going to come and take your house. Like,
and then they're going to put it up for auction.
Yeah, they're going to put it up for auction.
And a sheriff, an agent of the state, is going to come with a gun and force you out on the
but
street.
But see, those are white people problems. We're talking about Harry.
It's black people's problems, too.
The foreclosure crisis.
So, yeah, the foreclosure crisis.
Oh, 2008, 2013.
But I see what Spangle's trying to say.
What I'm trying to say is the danger is more immediate.
They might take you out of their house, but they're not going to shoot you first and then drag you out.
Yeah.
Right, yeah. Yeah, but if you don't have your house, you don't have somewhere to live, you don't have shelter, you're going to die.
I absolutely agree, and I think statistics prove this, as does just personal experience watching the news.
I prefer anecdotes.
Yeah.
Well, there is an epidemic of African Americans being treated unilaterally more unfairly by the justice system than white people.
Like, the sentencing is 3-1 more severe.
There is absolutely no argument with that. That is 100% true. But I think it is important to recognize, and I don't want people to think that I'm trying to change the point, but, like, the nature of this problem when it comes to police violence is so much deeper than just black and white. It really is. Because a great example is this happened, I don't remember how long ago it was, but I remember I read about it when the Eric Garner thing happened. There was a kid in Wisconsin a few years back, a couple, 10 years ago, I don't remember exactly what it was. This kid is, you know, he's a kid, and a white kid, and his dad was a retired Air Force veteran. And this kid got shot in underneath a street lamp in front of his mom, in front of his sister, got killed by this cop while he was handcuffed, standing by this by his vehicle, and that cop is still on the force. And that stuff happens to white people, too. That doesn't mean that it's not a problem that it happens to black people more than it happens to white people. But
it's universal.
It is a universal problem of the state versus the people. Now, the fact that they go after black people more than they go after white people is a problem in and of itself. But it's not changed the fact that there is a epidemic of double standard that is lethal, a lethal double standard, where cops can literally kill you without cause. And they don't even get indicted.
In the name of keeping the public order.
The only person that went to jail was the guy that videotaped the cops killing Eric Garner. The cops didn't go to jail. The Baltimore
They didn't even get indicted. They didn't even have a trial.
By a system that has been said they can indict a ham sandwich if they want to.
It is 100% protection. It is so much the state protecting their own. And it's people like normal Americans. They forgive it. They endorse it because it's they have to. It's almost like people like me. I think people like younger people, like we see it from a different view. But like older folks, like our parents, our grandparents, they must still think it's 1990 or like it's Nixon. And that, like, there's still, like, doped up riots in L.A.
The silent majority.
Like this, I mean, they must think that this is what it is because they look at it as, like, you know, he shouldn't have been breaking the law.
Sure.
Like, he shouldn't have been doing that. He's just like,
Snowden's a traitor.
Like, you are, like, this holier than thou attitude. Like, I haven't done anything wrong. I don't see a problem. Therefore, there is no problem. And everyone else is just the one that's in the fault because cops are imperfect.
Right.
They can't do anything wrong.
A cop recently passed away, was shot and killed, and by all accounts was a great guy, a great public servant. He served the community well. He was well-liked by the majority black population that he served for 30 years. And he was shot in trying to arrest someone by a young African-American male. And they took the basketball. We have the Indiana Pacers, the NBA team. They shut down the entire city and held a public funeral, you know. And it becomes state worship.
Yeah.
And it is – you want to know how the Nazis got away –
I've heard that my mic might be low.
Oh. You want to know because you got to lean and talk into it.
Well.
Is that better?
That's much better.
There you go. Yeah.
How did the I like Nazi. Now, how did the Nazi?
You know, back to the Nazis. You want to know how the Nazis got away with systematically killing 6 million people? It's because I want to play this real quick clip from The House I Live In, which is a documentary that we recommend on the show all the time. It is a comprehensive look of the justice system in the United States of America, from the crafting of drug laws, which Ehrlichman said, one of the main advisors to Richard Nixon, said that in the summer of 69, there were a lot of race riots because Martin Luther King and Bobby Kennedy had been killed, and black people had had enough, and the Stokely Carmichaels of the world were starting to take over, the Black Panthers were starting to take over, and God damn it, don't you feel like that today? Like that there's rioting in Baton Rouge tonight, don't you go, I get it. Yep. I totally get it.
In the absence of justice, people turn to, you know, people the authoritarians.
People take to justice.
Like that's another thing that I don't think people understand is like you cannot ask for any way to create more or a less respect for law and order and more riots, more violence, more death than you can by not respecting the individual rights of people en masse as you do when you literally kill people in the street.
Let's put it in human terms. Treating a human being like they have dignity.
Like they're a piece of garbage.
Like they're
like nothing will get like if you literally set yourself up as a class of people, i.e. the political class, i.e. and let me be frank, there of course are cops who are good cops. Like everyone knows that there are average Joe sheriffs, but just because there are some that are good doesn't change the fact that there are so many that are bad.
Right. But it's good not, it's are not, just usually doing their job, and yet they're hailed as gods.
But yeah. See, right. But no, it's not. And I want to finish my point. I've got to bring this all back around, please. The problem. I have my fork ready. All right, I've got my fork. Here we go. Ready?
Oh boy.
So
the poobah.
You have to understand is that it's groupthink, and that's the why we're in the situation that we're in.
Tribalism.
All black people are just drug dealing, crank addicted, mm-hmm. gun toting. They're gonna kill a cop once they get their hands on you know. And then all cops are great on one side, all cops are bad on the other side. And so all the racists on Facebook, I'm sorry, if you're going to spew to me Sterling's criminal record, you just come off as a complete fucking racist asshole. And I'll tell you why. Because not one thing on that list said he deserved to die for that particular crime.
Literally be executed. Shot in the back.
Because a homeless guy cried out he had a gun when he didn't, and he was selling CDs.
Yep. Right.
I mean, so, like, Kelly Thomas literally dies as he yells for help that his dad says, Dad, please help me. And they beat him to death.
I can't mm-hmm. breathe.
Like I can't breathe, and they're literally choking him to death. Mm-hmm. And like, what does America do, or what is a majority?
Well,
he
committed
do?
A crime. Well, in time,
you see, he twisted his wrist a little bit. Right. He was resisting, so he deserved what he got. You deserve to die because you twisted your wrist from somebody who snuck up behind you to subdue you. So, are you kidding me?
So what happens when you bring up that person's criminal record? It says to me that you don't give a shit about the humanity of that person. You don't have empathy for the person that is dying in that video, that you don't give a shit about justice. And how do we get to this point? This is David Simon. He's the creator of The Wire, a show that I love, that I think is a documentary on how good people get caught up in bad incentives and bureaucracies and bad outcomes like this come about. Because it is our firm belief on this show that it's not that cops are evil. It's not that the hospital attendants in episode 91 of this program, where we talk about Rachel Woods passing, where 100 people saw her dying and nobody did anything. It's not that those people are necessarily evil. It's that they have been given incentives to act in an evil way because of inaction. So because of government bureaucracy. And so David Simon is the founder, and he is the one talking in the documentary, The House I Live In.
Saying, let's get rid of all these drug addicts and drug dealers, and once we throw away the key on them, we'll solve this problem. Why don't you try saying it to yourself this way? All these Americans that we don't need anymore, the factories are closed, we don't need them, you know, the textile mills, they're gone, GM is closing plants. We don't need these people. They're extra Americans. We don't need them. Let's just get rid of the bottom 15% of the country. Let's lock them up. Maybe, in fact, let's see if we can make money off locking them up in the short term. Even though it's going to be an incredible burden for our society, even though it's going to destroy these families, you know, where these people are probably integral to the lives of other Americans, let's just get rid of them. You know, I mean, if at that point, why don't you just say kill the poor? If we kill the poor, we're going to be a lot better off, because that's what the drug wars become.
And so we have built a system in our society where we just kill the poor and then we monetize the rest. And you heard that in episode 160, where we talked to two gentlemen who have been through that process, who have been basically human chattel, who are human property in this day and age. They commit their crimes, but a guy like Daron was railroaded and maintains his innocence and was never given justice. He was never given the opportunity to prove whether or not he was innocent or guilty. He was just railroaded. And, you know, so what you end up getting is we're dangerously close to losing our humanity in this country because we just don't give a shit about black people. We don't give a shit about white people. We don't give a shit about
people brown other people. Than our immediate group.
We don't give a shit about the bottom 15% of this country. We don't give a shit about people who live overseas. We just don't give a shit about human beings anymore.
Yeah.
And if you want to talk about why we have a society where a young white male walks into a school and shoots people up, it's because this is the society that we have become. We make it okay for people to just continually execute people, and we make it okay for cops. You're telling kids, listen, if you go kill people and you have a magic badge on, then it's okay.
You did it in the name of the people, and aren't you a winner?
Yeah. If he would have did that to brown people, you know, like in some hut next, you know, overseas, he would have got a medal.
With a drone, yeah.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. If he was sitting in Utah.
It's inevitable, though.
Yeah. But like, the thing is, like, if you go into, like, some random, like, pick any copblock.org, like, comment section, and you watch people like, those cop blockers, they have no empathy for those police. Those police have no empathy for them.
Yeah, absolutely.
Trained not to. It's the blind administration of like the law and enforcement.
I've watched Wing Chun and, like, people, like, martial art police trainers, and they've talked about, like, hey, you know, you're outnumbered. Yes, they can attack you. Yes, you have to be on guard. But unless you have empathy for these people, that's what agitates them. That's what comes after you. They don't need a gun to take you out. At 10 feet, a knife can do just as good as a gun.
Right. You know, Maya Axton was a cop blocker and was just filming the Shelbyville police. And Rupert, he's in Shelbyville, and Maya was working for Rupert. And Maya was just doing cop block stuff, going out with the local Shelbyville group and filming the police and their interactions with the public. Well, the police didn't like it. And so Rupert's trailer, all of a sudden, it couldn't be parked there anymore. And he started getting tickets. And he had problems with the planning commission. And the mayor's office wanted to have meetings with him. And the city council started to become concerned. And so Rupert had to fire Maya. And there was a lot of stuff that Maya, listeners to this program, know Maya. Yeah. But the message was clear. You know, if
disassociate or have a horrible life.
Or we're going to ruin your ability to improve our community. If you listen to our episode with Rupert, here is a guy who is basically doing nothing but good for Shelbyville.
Rehabilitating the people who have to pay a debt to society, but doing it on his own dime with his own time and fixing the problems they are incapable of dealing with on their own.
Right. Yeah. Because tribalism, that trait of tribalism that helped humanity get to this point is the problem now.
Yeah.
That rare people that, like, you know, that think for themselves, that's rare. It's so rare. That's why the Liberty community is so freaking small. That's a rare type of thinking.
And even in our community, people still don't do it very much.
No. Yeah.
And this was this sense of, like, the coarsening of society and, like, the voyeurism that's going on, they all contribute to it. Like, if you're familiar with Karl Marx, right, his idea was that man is alienated from the product of his labor. He's alienated from the means of production, how he makes it, because he doesn't own what he makes. And he's alienated from his fellow man because they're his competitors in what they make. So it creates this sense of competition. The reality is the welfare state works the same way. No longer is there an investment on my behalf as a charitable gift to you, Harry, Creighton, anyone like that. There's no sense of investment and pride and ownership of the donation I give to you or the charity I give to you. Instead, I've given it to the state and I give my taxes and I say they'll handle it. I begin to resent you because then I'm working till May 31st or April 30th each year so that the other people can be the can have access to things like welfare, to get, you know, the safety net, to realistically pay for wars, to pay for the justice system, to pay for regime overthrow.
Pay for old people and their health care.
Yeah. Right. And so what ends up happening is when you add a third party to it with the idea that this guarantees access to people that need help and helps them up and gives them the ladder to, you know, participate in society – what ends up happening is over time you start to resent the fact that you're going to work each morning at 8 a.m. while you see that person standing on the corner during rush hour asking for a few nickels. You can't stand it because they can go and participate in a system and not have to put forward any effort, and they're no longer your fellow being. They are someone that is not necessarily the enemy, but the parasite you can never remove yourself from, and it desensitizes and makes us siloed off.
There's two new books about the cop killings out. One, Mark Lamont Hill, a CNN contributor, And it comes from more of a white privilege. But then there was another book, and I wish I could remember the title. It was on Democracy Now! On July 6th. It was the Nowhere Man, or it had something along those lines. But basically, the author, and I'd love to get an interview and talk with him about this. He says, you know, these guys are nowhere in society. They're total ghosts in society. It's the Amity Schley's forgotten man concept.
The shadow citizens.
The shadow citizens, you know, where Amity's book, the Forgotten Man, was about the hardworking man in the Great Depression that carried society forward and had that resentment. And we're now in a situation where we have a whole lot of just people who are just shadow citizens. You listen to episode 144 with Amanda, and you hear somebody who is just lost in the system and has no prayer of getting help. You listen to episode 160. You listen to two guys who are just without resources and have no ability to get help. They're just victims of of what we as a society have voted in. And then all of a sudden, a guy like Alton Sterling or Eric Garner or, you know, Trayvon Martin.
Tamir Rice, the 12-year-old.
Rice. They come from nowhere and rise up to not be human beings, because even the supporters of the pro-Trayvon side versus they're not... We're not going to sit here and discuss Alton Sterling's humanity. We're going to argue whether or not his criminal record matters. We're going to argue what the police did. We're going to argue if his arm twisted. We're going to argue about all that stuff. And so the author's argument is that they become avatars.
Yep.
That they become avatars of a societal problem, as opposed to never really getting to the true problem, which is seeing the humanity of Alton Sterling. You know, and Democracy Now! Did an interview with the store owner, and the store owner said, he's a great guy. Came in, smiling every day. He was working hard to turn his life around. He's working hard to feed his kids. You know, he had, like, I think 4 kids. You know, and so to white middle class conservatives, he becomes just another, you know, broke down black kid with a criminal record. And of course, he deserved to die, because what value does he add to society? To another, he becomes an avatar of a system that is broken, and none of us ever kind of get to the humanity. And that's the problem, is that
we forget that these are people.
Yeah. We forget that these are people. And that's how you get to a Nazi Germany.
Yeah.
That's how you get to a place where people just start looking the other way. Mm-hmm. Every 2 days, that's a stunning fact, 500 people, 500 young black men, every 2 days a young black male is killed by a police officer in this nation. How many of you know that? And how many of you, if you know it, now are going to do anything about it or give a shit about it? I'm not a young black male. You know, what does it matter?
The fact, like, the
meanwhile, my friend Harry has to sit there before he leaves his house tonight and think about whether he could protect himself or not, because it might be his death warrant.
Because the right to self-preservation is a threat towards the occupying force.
Right.
Unreal.
Yeah,
that's why we had the Second Amendment.
There's so many different black deaths that happen from police that when the older black guy who watches the news, when I see him at work at 6 o'clock in the morning and we talk about the recent news, he's like, "Hey, did you see that other black shooting?" And I'm like, "Which one?" And then he has to go like, search, like, not this one, but this one. I'm like, what? And, you know, like, even when he was trying to tell me this one that happened in Minneapolis, was like, you mean Baton Rouge? Like, no. There was another one that happened. Mm-hmm. I was like, what?
Yeah.
Brings it up on the screen. I was like, oh, my God. This again, it's happening so much. It's not really news. Yeah. It's like, oh, there's another kitten. Oh, we have a kitten.
It's inevitable. We've created an assembly line justice system where people are steamrolled, no one's ever giving the right to real, true due process and the ability, a fair shot against the overwhelming license of the state to enact justice.
Yeah,
it's carried over into the enforcement agencies.
It's almost industrialized.
It is.
It's like
it is a system,
and much of it has to do a lot. I think one thing that people, this is just me kind of upset at how the perspective that people that either side has taken. I think people on the left immediately jump on the race angle And I think it's a prominent part, but it's not the only part.
Sure.
And I think because it happens
to white people too, and it is a socioeconomic thing as much as
And I think and then white people look at the crime part, and I think that's a part, but it's not the whole story. I think ultimately what the problem I have with how we look at this is, like, we forget that this is, like, we have tried to extrapolate and look at every symptom and not the cause. That the cause is the increased amount of government in our lives.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. We have forgotten that what is the state? What is it? Like, what do you think is going to – like, what do you – when you say let's make selling sick – when you say let's make selling cigarettes on the corner illegal, what does that mean? It doesn't mean that we're gonna slap you on the wrist when somebody comes up and tries to sell you a Lucy. It doesn't mean that we're not gonna send a reporter out to shame you when you do it. It doesn't mean we're all gonna be healthy now because everyone's gonna stop smoking cigarettes. It means we're gonna send people into your neighborhoods with guns to literally kill you if you refuse to comply with selling cigarettes illegally.
Yes. And not even refuse if you don't do it fast enough.
Yeah, what it means. And that is the nature of the state. The state is violence. It is murder. It is death. That's how it operates. It isn't sunshine and fairies.
Let them preach.
And we are forgetting. We forget that because we try and look past. We try and say, well, there's not all cops are bad. They're not all bad apples. And we try and say, oh, well, there's some of these people who die. They have criminal records. And we try in every way to excuse overlook the
logical
very nature
fallacy
of the fact,
after logical fallacy.
Because we're trying to win a Facebook argument.
The problem is not the individual inaction or individual problem or the individual like immorality of any given person.
Yep.
The problem is the entire concept of government that we have in modern society. We expect it to babysit us through life. And when we do that, we're having people with guns do the babysitting. And when they don't like the outcome, they will shoot you. They will kill you and they will get away with it.
Because
the law is on their side. They are the law.
Yep.
They are the law.
They write it, they enforce it, and they judiciate it.
We never talked about what happened with Alton Sterling, so I want to go over the details.
Baton Rouge, he's a 37-year-old guy selling CDs out in front of a convenience store. A homeless man, apparently there's a report by a senior law official or a law enforcement official in Baton Rouge that he had told a homeless man that he had a gun or showed it to him. Homeless man's there. When they ask him to stop, he screams out, he has a gun. Shockingly, in a true twist of fate, the body cameras amazingly come off.
Yeah.
What are the odds of all the gin joints in the world?
Alton says to the homeless man, "I have a gun." Shows him the gun. When the cops show up,
but it wasn't real.
Okay,
it was fictional. There isn't a gun.
All right,
and he was not armed
because maybe the crazy homeless person.
Well, homeless guys traditionally give the best eyewitness testimonials.
Sure, and you know their mental health is usually pretty good.
Yeah, I mean nothing wrong with the hardcore unemployed and the homeless, but
right,
it wouldn't be my first thought when I go to think about who is actually telling the truth.
So the police arrived for what reason?
A report that he had been out front, and then what was the other? He threatened to shoot somebody. A false report by the homeless man.
I don't remember.
And so this goes on. The police arrive. If you see the video, not the first video that was taken down and downloaded, the video that came out last night on 107 or 108.9 in Baton Rouge.
Here, let me play it. It's 36 seconds long.
Yep.
He is down on the ground in front of a car.
Mm-hmm.
And there's two police officers. These police officers are apparently in a special unit. And they're both have been on the force for 5 years. And they're both legacy guys because their mom or their dad were longtime police officers in the department. That's how they got accelerated to this special force. So don't expect anything to happen to these guys. They're on modified assignment. But being the sons of heroes of the Baton Rouge PD, I'm sure they'll be
getting some tough fights. Did you?
They'll swift justice.
Yeah.
They're on a police department that's killed 38 black people since the beginning of the year. I'm sure the police department will take corrective measures. So Alton Sterling is down on the ground, and you've got the two cops on top of him. He is face up on the ground. He's wearing a red sweater, And the cops seem to have him under control. He doesn't seem to be fighting.
Resisting or...
No. So let's take a listen to the audio here.
Hey, boss. Hey, boss. You're on the ground!
What's that for, man?
16, man. Keep shots fired. Shots fired.
So here's a recap of what happened. They are both, one is straddling his pelvis, the other is kind of, his knees are kind of by his head, and they are wrestling with him, mildly wrestling. I mean, there's really not much resisting.
Looks like a kid yard bully fight.
Right, basically
kicking on the weakling.
Two big guys on top of one guy,
which is usually how it happens.
And what doesn't he say something like, you know, I'm don't kill me. Mm-hmm. I mean, which, you know, a violent killer who is about to shoot two cops always says, please don't kill me, before they shoot him. And then the gun goes off, and
it doesn't go off. They shoot it.
They shoot him.
It wasn't the immaculate firing.
Yeah. They execute him.
The camera pulls away. He's shot in his chest. I mean, the shooting is close range.
It was an execution.
It was. And the officer then walks up and takes something out of his pocket. I don't know what that was that is taken out of his pocket. It looks like a gun, but it could be a candy bar because the video is very grainy. But, you know, pretty damning video. I mean, it is. It's an execution.
It doesn't matter, though.
Yeah.
Horrifying.
The damnation of the video doesn't matter. I mean, Eric Garner literally gets choked to death for everyone in the world to see.
Mm-hmm. Right. He shouldn't have had a breathing problem.
Yeah. I mean, like, well, he should have been selling cigarettes.
And he'd have probably committed a crime down the line anyway, so it was prevention.
You can be choked for a long period of time and say, I can't breathe.
Like,
usually someone who is healthy, who has worked out, can do it.
Like, that's why these stories come up now, and it's like I said at the beginning of the episode, like, the Eric Garner thing was the final straw for me. Like, if that's a situation that can outcome the way it does, and like we obviously has had no change whatsoever. Like, the opinions of the people haven't changed. The opinions of either side haven't changed. Like, the people, it hasn't done anything.
Literally, since we had those episodes last year, nothing has changed.
Like, if
why would it? The head of the Department of Justice, who's been called in to do the investigation and inquiry, just met with Bill Clinton and circumvented the law.
Right.
Just
why would you expect justice? Like, from the Department of Justice.
Literally, it's there. There's nothing that we can do. Like, there's nothing we can do other than, I mean, I don't know. What do you do against when an entire entity, which has all of the guns, is literally going to be able to just kill people? All they have to do is make it look violent, like, make it look like they're in a kerfuffle. All they got to do is have a little bit of a struggle.
Right. I'll tell
kill
you,
the guy,
you've been traded upon. What are you going to do?
I think the Panopticon is exactly what
the Panopticon.
The Panopticon.
You have a surveillance state. Every one of us does in our hand. Create a central hub where everyone's under surveillance all the time. If you're going to have surveillance on us, we're going to make sure that we return serve every interaction.
That's true.
Let me tell you what it does. It takes a white kid from Plainfield, Indiana, who grew up with no black friends, and I'm not going to say my parents were mildly racist. My mom wasn't. who didn't give a shit about black people or white people. I was raised to see no color. I mean, Plainfield school systems was very white, but you were raised without prejudice. I mean, it is bad to be racist. It's bad to, you know. But I didn't really care about this issue. And it wasn't until last year when I the riots in Baltimore, and you just go, wow, they're destroying property. That's really bad. They shouldn't do that. Now, after a year of it,
that's like perfect.
Now,
what are those people doing?
Right.
I was told to be in Baltimore at 5, ready to lose.
Now, like, I'm ready to like lead the Black Lives Rally down into Crown Hill and like let's all go. I mean, it's
sunshine.
Sunshine is the best sanitizer.
To tear this motherfucker up. The Ice Cube quote.
I'm saying sunshine is the best sanitizer.
And I think a good angle to look at this is, you know, African Americans have been saying that this has been happening for decades. And I think it's well, black people, African Americans, whatever you want to call
excuse
them.
His racism.
I'm sorry.
There aren't any more Africans here except for the ones that immigrated. They've been saying that this has been happening since...
Their violent calls to whatever he wants. Whatever.
They've been saying that this has been happening since forever, and you know it's always just been kind of it's almost like been relegated to black subculture. It's like stand-up comics say stuff about it, like, oh god, I got pulled over again.
Yeah,
but now it's because of the fact that everyone's got a camera on their hip. It actually is something that like that every single American at least knows about.
Yeah,
and that is a fair point to make. Is like what? Yeah. How much of this is stuff that's actually happening because it's new? It's now happening, and it wasn't happening before. And how much of it is just people getting on camera? What's been happening for decades?
The second you get pulled over, you start rolling your camera. It doesn't matter your race, color, creed.
Yeah,
you start rolling your camera or your audio.
Not just that. Follow them home.
Yeah. The violence.
Even when they're acting outside, you want to watch how quickly laws change when you constantly offer surveillance on every agent of the law at every level down to the DMV. You will watch the laws change overnight.
No, they won't.
Yes, they will.
They'll pass laws to go after.
No,
that's
not true.
Yes, they will. The state won't take it.
No, fuck you, Harry. I'm right.
No.
So,
won't take it. You've been traded upon. You have a few options. You can do your little, like, spy on
take
them.
Your
that's
black
not going
to
work.
No, take your black and yellow defeatist bullshit back to Pork Fest and stay
there. It's not defeatist. I'm simply saying, like, the best case scenario for this, I've been traded upon. My only options are, hey, I could try to live outside the system, or I can try to be close to this system, still try to get out of it, and try to live with other people who feel the same way I do. Trying to concentrate our power and trying to get rid of this type stuff as things. Trying to be separated from all this is not going to work for me.
Oh, no. Yeah, well,
you can either engage or escape.
So
and you can't escape.
Wait, inside of Indianapolis, there's not enough of us to watch these people. There's more IMPD officers and there's people who listen to this podcast who would watch them.
There's not enough coordination.
That's why I think it comes back to what I was saying in the last episode is like this is one of those issues that we're at a moment in time where there are enough upset people to make a strong enough minority bloc. Not minority in the sense of like a demographic sense, minority in the sense that it's like a vocal subgroup of the general electorate that can actually affect change. Because one thing, for all the faults of the American government system, minority blocs do actually get an ability to have a powerful voice if they organize and if they try their especially on a local level in Indianapolis, but if they organize, it's something that can actually affect. And like, look at what happened after Garner. You know, the city council that was, you know, everyone hated on it because it was just a bunch of white dudes that didn't represent their city. Like, it's like a bunch of African Americans that took over. Now they're in the city council. Now, that's not obviously a solution to the problem.
Two election cycles will go back to being one.
Yeah, it takes a long-term dedicated thing. But I think it's one of those things where this is an issue that you can get enough organization on.
This is something where you can build coalitions around.
Oh, absolutely.
Like with Cory Booker and Rand Paul and others.
Civilian oversight, community engagement, removal of weapons. You can use tasers but not guns. The state shouldn't have
people
lethal force.
People die from tasers. People
they
die
do.
From tasers.
But okay? I'd take getting shot with it. If you had been pulled over, I'd feel much safer if the cop had a taser than if he had his gun when you were asked to reach for your wallet.
Oh, perfectly honest, I would go with you that too. I honestly think like most beat cops or most cops who have interaction with the community at large, like the cops that are driving around, they shouldn't have guns. They also shouldn't be paid. I said that. Yes, they shouldn't be paid. They should be volunteer police officers without guns.
I think
the people who have guns should be paid and they should stay at the freaking station and be called in.
They come out from outside with no heat, none of the passion from their situation. They simply get called in and be the gun on the scene.
I think beat cops need to be localized to specific areas and stay there for their entire career.
Well, like the guy that I mentioned that was killed in the line of duty, you know, had been in the same neighborhood for a long time and had earned the respect. He was a white cop who earned the respect of the black community because he had been in that area for a long time.
And that's how it used to be back in like the long, long time.
So how many police officers are watching this going, oh, armchair police officers, blah, blah, blah. Well, fuck you. You work for us. And it's about time that we start flexing that muscle.
No, the thing is, like, no, screw that. You know, like, there's like, you put this uniform on. Like, I could put that uniform. I'll put that uniform for you. Give me the uniform for it.
There's not.
Me and Maya will go around. Give me and Maya the uniform and a squad car.
I'll take the place.
We'll there's nothing brave. There's nothing brave about walking around with a gun. I do not doubt that there are people who want to be cops because they legitimately feel like they're going to make this society better. Mm-hmm. I don't doubt for a minute that people go through the entire thing of. Because they just want to help their communities. I don't doubt that.
Absolutely. Yeah.
But there is absolutely nothing brave about being the guy who says, I'm going to walk around with a gun. Now, being the guy...
And you have to tell me you have one if I can't see it.
Being the guy that's the first one to interact with crime, that is a situation where it is dangerous. That's a dangerous situation. But it's also a personal situation that you put yourself in. And you don't get more rights because you choose to put yourself in a dangerous situation.
Yes.
So, no. You get a gun, you walk around, and you don't have the authority to just say, well, I have to be on a different standard than everyone else. Because of this. No.
Yeah.
You're a citizen. You're not a soldier. You're a citizen. That's
thank you. The key. Thank you. Yeah. Hey, you know who's more brave than police officers? Third shift CVS. Convenience store workers who sit there unfreaking armed. They're more brave than police officers. They're unarmed. They should rob all their time.
We should assign MRAPs based upon the danger of the job you're in. So all third shift workers at Walgreens and CVS should get MRAPs.
Yeah. You don't see freaking CVS employees pulling guns on people and killing, shooting people like, well, I thought he was going for his gun because he accidentally showed it when he went for his, you know, chase card. You don't see that
after I asked him to.
Right, yeah. You don't see that happen at CVS. You don't
because
see
the
that
CVS
happen at Walgreens.
Training video is don't scan a MasterCard when you meant to scan a Visa.
Exactly. And they've got more to lose than that. No one's going to care if some CVS worker gets shot. No, there's going to be no parade, no pomp and circumstance.
Just so we're even, Think Progress reports that 532 people have been killed by police officers. The Guardian says 580 this year. The Washington Post says 486.
It's their methodology of what actually counts, like gun-related crimes, crimes.
Now the
suicide by cop is inflated with that, too.
And the ages, rage range.
Right. Mm-hmm. Now the Officer Down Memorial page says that 53 police officers have died in the line of duty. So there is a vast disparity. I mean, I don't know, but
the other thing, you can go like, how many convenience store workers have been shot and killed this year? How many, truck drivers have been shot and killed this year? How many other professions have been shot and killed this year? Sure. How many freaking apartment air conditioned maintenance workers have been shot this year?
You know, I will say about videotaping, going back to that. Paul and Joyce Morrow, when they formed the Libertarian Party of Rush County, they started going to county council meetings and county commission meetings and videotaping those meetings and putting it up on YouTube. And that alone stopped three crooked deals in a year because there was accountability. And nobody goes to county commissioner meetings. And so when a citizen shows up to a county commissioner meeting or a small town city council meeting, because they all know each other. Maybe the small town flyer, you know, in Hendricks County, the flyer reporter shows up.
They just got done playing in each other's golf outing.
Right. You know, they all kind of know each other. But when some stranger with a video camera sets up their tripod and starts recording it, everybody gets real nervous.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And when you start putting that up on YouTube for people to watch, you're going to get three views. But you know what?
It is the
fact that that is on YouTube.
And those three views are probably journalists.
And do you know how much pressure the Bornholz got to stop showing up to county commissioner meetings? How much pressure and crap they got for videotaping?
I'm sure it's plenty.
But you know how
much... For archiving public... the actual act of public service?
How much money the Morals saved the citizens of Rush County just by going once a month to set up a video camera?
This is the best way to look at it, is when you walk down the street and you walk by a city government building and you see 300 different cameras pointing at you from every other angle and you have to walk through and you have like 14 different cops watching you as you walk through the door, how do you feel?
Yeah.
Now, how do you think that that feeling is only because they're the ones looking at you? Because I guarantee you that if you had the situation flipped, they're not going to feel comfortable either.
Mm-hmm.
And they're not going to feel comfortable for the same exact reasons, because if they make one mistake, everybody knows about it.
Right.
Every single person.
If surveillance didn't work, we'd have never had the Patriot Act, or not necessarily work, but deter behavior or coerce behavior. We would never have the Patriot Act. Richard Nixon would have never been forced out of office.
Yep.
Surveillance and watching the individuals responsible with the administration, the adjudication, and legislating and creating the laws, it doesn't guarantee good government, because it's probably not possible since man's flawed, but it raises the bar a hell of a lot higher than it is now.
And it needs to be very clearly stated. We're not saying that everyone needs to be watched. The government needs to be watched.
We're granting them a license and a monopoly.
If the state deserves to be watched.
If surveillance,
every single minute, every single second.
If surveillance
of the day,
didn't work, Edward Snowden wouldn't be in Russia.
Kiss, kiss, kiddies. Who would watch the Watchmen?
Yeah, who watches the Watchmen?
So, all right, kids, let's wrap this up. Final thoughts. We'll start with Creighton.
Let me do final thoughts. Somebody else go.
Greg?
Final thoughts. What's going on? And the rest of the world. You want to go, Harry? Go ahead.
I'll do this one. I usually hate going first, but like, I'm kind of like ramped up, ready to go, like full stuff. But
Hashtag Black Lives Matter.
No, all lives matter or none lives matter. Either every life matter or no life matters, because in the grand scheme of things, 200 years in the future, no one's going to know your name. Everything doesn't. Nothing really matters.
I wasn't told that I'm a millennial.
I hate this. I forget. I'm just going to claim Generation Y. Anyways, you've been treaded upon. You would get a couple choices. You could sit here and you could stay in where you are. You can be alone in your little small town. Small towns help. Small towns help move things around. What state has a lot of small towns? New Hampshire. New Hampshire has a lot of small towns. New Hampshire, if 20,000 liberty lovers get to New Hampshire or plus more, can actually affect change, get things done. It's a state that has effectively have used the 10th Amendment to nullify a lot of the stuff that's coming from the federal government. A lot of this garbage just doesn't happen. That's a lot of the reason, like, I want to move to New Hampshire. I've been treaded upon. I have no idea what to do. A lot of this stuff scares the crap out of me.
Sorry, Harry. Your voice is much more powerful and much more amplified by staying in Indianapolis and being on We Are Libertarians.
I get that, but I feel like my life is in jeopardy staying here in Indianapolis any longer. I feel like as long as I stay in this larger city, I have been pulled over, harassed by cops so much, and sometimes I just kind of like, whatever, I get it. I'm just sick and tired.
Yeah.
I'm tired of it. I'd rather go in an area like I am, like, you know, there's probably like 10 black guys. Yeah, I get it. I freaking get it. And I'd rather be in New Hampshire where I'm getting pulled over. I open my phone, I hit cell 411, I'm being pulled over. And I know there's gonna be some liberty lovers that are gonna pull up, they're gonna have cameras on me, and they're gonna be watching these cops.
That would be nice.
And since this is such a small town, you know what? I probably know this cop. This cop probably brought a computer off me.
Right.
Or this cop, I probably have had donuts with this cop.
But that's racist, Harry.
But that's just how it is. It's just like, I feel like in this town, like, it's just too many people. It's too big. And some of these people are just too affected with the tribalism, and they can't stand out on their own. I'm just sick and tired of it.
Yeah.
You know,
I think my view on all of this is there is the fundamental problem. What is the fundamental problem? Is the fundamental problem racism? I think that is a problem, but it's not the fundamental problem.
Mm-hmm.
Is the fundamental problem crime? That's a problem. It's not the fundamental problem. I think the fundamental problem is a 100% misunderstanding of the role of the state in our lives. We have, and this goes back further than just police. What police do? It's a long tradition, and since like the 20th century, that if something's illegal, something is wrong, we should make it illegal. We look to the state as a babysitter to take care of things that we think are wrong. Like, we believe that the government is the solution to problems. And we hear that a lot as libertarians. Like, we don't think the government is the solution to problems. And we hear it's almost become a bumper sticker. I don't think a one-size-fits-all is the solution to this problem. Sure. But what we really mean, I think most libertarians who actually understand the concept, what we really mean is not that the government isn't the solution to the problem. It's that force is not the solution to this problem. And we have to understand, and this is not we as in libertarians, this is we as in American people. And I'm talking to grandma who thinks that all the black guys need to just go and stop smoking weed. Mm-hmm. And I'm talking to the black lady. I'm talking to everybody. We have to understand what the government is and what we're asking the government to do. Because power corrupts. And if you give the state authority to kill over every little trivial thing, then they're going to do it, and they're going to get away with it. Sure. You can't
in your name.
In your name. And you know, cops face trouble. Cops face violence. But that's the way the world is.
Right.
We have since the beginning of this country, there has always been a threat of violence from crime, a threat of violence from the other, a threat of violence from foreign nations. It's always been there, but we've never used it as an excuse to rain down tyranny upon people, even if it's micro tyrannies in the sense of like cops in little communities. We've never used that as an excuse to do that, but we are today because we are just so separated from everything. We are so stuck in our... It's amazing that in the internet age, when communication is at the level that it is, that we can be so bubbled, so cut off from so many other communities, because that's really what it is. You have grandma's, you know, community where she's stuck with her other friends from 1960, and they're talking about how it was in the LA riots, and that's all she talks to. And they have libertarians that only talk to the libertarians in their Facebook groups, and they're stuck in these communities, and they don't really realize that you're not able to communicate outside that. So that's the problem, and the solution, I think, is as Chris said, is more transparency, more sunshine on cops in general. And I think more concerted, organized action on the part of everybody, not just Black Lives Matter, but everybody on addressing this issue of over criminalization of everything and the double standard that is in the police department, because it is a circular problem. Cops get away with it. They do it again. They get caught. They get away with it. It just keeps making it one reinforces the other. So it's a fundamental problem, and it's probably the purest moral crisis that we face today.
Yeah. This just in from the breaking news app. Witnesses on scene report hearing multiple gunshots in area Black Lives Matter protest. Multiple police officers are on the ground.
Two cops were shot.
It's inevitable.
Yeah.
Every action has an equal and opposite reaction, and an occupying force is always forced out.
Yep.
Did
you go?
I do. Okay. You know, something that's not talked about is that we live in a world of customization. We live in a world where we get to pick the news we listen to. We get to pick the opinions we see. We get to pick every element of our life to the atomization of it, really. We pick literally everything we consume is our decision, and it's able to be customized to exactly how we like it. What that means is that it creates walls. It breaks down the bonds of commonality. It breaks down mandatory public service, which I'm not for, and I don't think is a good thing, but I'm saying that that is a forced interaction with individuals you would not encounter. World War, like, you know, men being drafted. There is a benefit to that, except it is a moral crime, and it's a moral war, and I'm against it. But the forced interaction makes you know that, in this case, Alden Sterling is a guy that's got four kids or three kids, and he's busting his ass to reform himself, and that he's not a parasite to the system that you work hard to prop up so that he can skate by. And it makes us more humane through forced interaction, and it's common experiences we share not just as people in a community but as a nation. On a major scale. And so one of the byproducts of the atomization and customization is that we end up being so siloed off and only associating with individuals who think exactly like us and hating people over the smallest detail, which we see in the libertarian community all the time.
Yep.
And it makes us desensitized, it makes us dehumanized, and it makes us feel like, I don't know, it makes people have a looking glass syndrome where they don't, you know, it feels like the internet, it doesn't feel like real life. And that is what's going on right now.
Harry?
It's all you newcomers with the freaking internet. I've been on the internet for like almost 20 years. And a lot of you people...
What is that A with the circle around it? Is that that... Is that about or around? What is that?
And don't say you people, okay?
I'm sick and tired of you people.
You honkies ruined liberty in the internet.
Like, I swear you guys are like the AOL freaking generation who got on the internet and you only know internet from like what AOL online.
Not never like been back the, in my day.
Back in my day.
I was on CompuServe.
We had to get on the internet and find things out. You had to go out and reach things out there.
I had to go into the command prompt and type things in to get an application.
You know, you're like, no one goes out and crawls and finds outside their community. You are right. Yes,
I you bet
are
you grew
absolutely
up with...
right. These millennials that are coming up here, because I'm Generation Y, I hated that term for years, but I accept it because I'm not taking a generation millennial, and I'm too young for Gen X.
I bet
damn
you
it.
Kids grew but... up with colored screens. I remember when the TV took a minute to turn on.
I actually have a TV that did took a minute to turn on, so screw you.
Is it next to your grills?
Which grills?
Anyways, you actually have to, like, you have to go out and look for content. Stuff wasn't spoon-fed to you. You had to go out and look for it.
Well, there wasn't an algorithm dictating what you saw.
Right, yeah. That is true. I freaking hate Facebook. The only reason I'm on Facebook is because of Wall. I would have left probably like two, maybe 3 years ago.
I can't wait until it's not popular enough and I can just get off.
I know, I went off so bad.
Joe just said that he's taking 2 weeks off. If he makes it the 2 weeks, he'll probably stay off forever.
It is the operating system of the modern world.
No, it's not. No, it's not. I really believe that I can probably, I'm almost at the point that I'm willing to spend $1,000 to get every Wall member into one room. And teach you how to use something else. Show that there's something else. There's something better to communicate on. Yes, we can still
Google Chat.
The last person that tried this was deported.
Google Chat.
And in the simple fact that
well,
we can
Harry,
get out.
It's been nice. Yeah. Time to find a new black guy.
And the simple fact,
I'm not joining Black Planet. I'm sorry, Harry. I won't go to a shitty MySpace.
Facebook. You can still touch Facebook. It's just federated code, just like emails.
World Star Hip Hop Chat is not going to happen.
And not freaking.
Then
Facebook
we would have a lot of fights.
Get me off of Black People. Actually, I might be up for Black People Meet.
Nothing will drive podcast growth like retweeting it and sharing it with each other who already listen.
I got four
now
followers.
That's what I call viral.
I got four followers. There's only five of us. Woo!
I call that
500 retweets, no more listens. What happened?
I call that liberty.me. All right, kids. My turn. And I agree with Greg. I think if you look at the conversation that we had on episode 160 with Daron and Richard Samuels, and I think it was I don't get to sit other than my black friend Harry and my other black friend Abdul, which are the two whitest black people ever. Listen, you've got a Buck Commander hat on, bro. you heard your truck description earlier. You know, I don't really have a lot of minority friends. Wall has been great because I have been able to make a lot of friends who don't look like me and aren't from the same place as me. And you get to come to an understanding that you didn't have before. And it goes to what Greg was saying, is that we've got to get out of our silos and get to meet people of different communities and understand differences in different cultures. And come to different appreciations. Obviously, Harry's done that with the grilling community and with the Terry Labonte community. And it was eye-opening in episode 160 to get to hear what it was like inside, to be a young black man to go through the justice system and or the lack of justice system. Because that's not something that I heard. I had a much greater appreciation for what a large segment of our population, fellow human beings, go through. I'm not going to preach about, you know, this is the most libertarian closing statements ever. Greg talked about greater technology for connection, creating railed against the anatomy of the state. Harry talked about technology and moving to New Hampshire. And I'm going to talk about emotions.
How do I hold all these feels?
It's, you know... I have become a more of a libertarian and more of a I care more about civil liberties now than I did when I first became a libertarian 10 years ago because of the path that I started down when I went through a divorce. And after my divorce, I valued stoicism in a perverted manner, which is the typical American male, which is keep all your feelings to yourself, don't have any, and deny that you have any in the first place. Never get in touch with who you truly are. Yes, Harry. Harry's
cold, right. Objective detachment.
Right. Treat everyone like a cold, distant father.
Mm-hmm. It's like an Ayn Rand novel.
Right.
I don't know. There's not enough rape.
Now, and I was a fairly miserable person. I'm not saying I am a happy person now, but I'm getting there, I think. And, you know, a year ago I started therapy and I got cured in the fall and stopped going to therapy, and then my life fell apart. Back going once a week, and it's been great, and I've been learning a lot about myself. And as I have learned to get in touch with who I am and learn a lot about my humanity and my struggles and getting in touch with the traumatic things that have happened in my life, it gives me a greater appreciation for the trauma that other people go through in life. It gives me a greater appreciation for the struggles of other people. And as I have sat down and started working through my own stuff, I've started to appreciate other people's stuff more, too. And you stop going, well, that black person should just stop doing drugs and stop committing crimes. And you start going, man, why did that person do that? Because now because of this past year and the reading and all the work that I've tried to do on myself, I go, wow, that person's an angry, hurting person. What led up to that? There's motives. That's, you know, my coping skills are, it's not isolation. It's push people away by being mean and being an asshole to people, you know, and like the other day I posted a status about fireworks and I was just such a dick in it, and it felt so fucking good. It was so therapeutic to just be mean.
You felt like Donald Trump, didn't you?
Oh, it was great. I made myself great again.
Huge.
But, you know, but it was that acting out against society that just made me feel so good. And, you know, I never...
We're going to make you feel so good.
Right.
We're going to...
So good. I have all the best...
You'd be tired of feeling good.
I have all the best feelings. And so but I recognize now, like, oh, okay, that's a thing that I do to cope, and I shouldn't do that because that pushes people away, blah, blah, blah. You know, so as I learn to stop talking to myself in a negative way, an ex-girlfriend recently said, you know, you should do comedy, but do you have the ability to be self-deprecating? And I thought about it, and I thought, because a year ago, almost this time, I just decided that I would stop thinking or saying anything bad about myself. I'm going to stop putting myself down, and I'm going to stop talking to myself. Like, I would never let Greg talk to me the way... Well, I might, but I would never let Greg talk to me the way that I used to talk to me. You know, I didn't like it, and I was mean to myself.
There's probably more slurs when Greg would say it anyway.
Right.
Yeah.
Now, obviously, I'm comfortable with myself because everybody makes fun of me, and I'm fine with it, except for the Canadian jokes. You got to stop that. They're not funny anymore. And that is not sarcasm. I'm being very serious about that.
Are you going to apologize for that?
No, that is. Fuck you.
See, I would take that seriously, but there's so many Tim Hortons receipts.
Decor,
I'm so sorry, and I will take you to Tim Hortons and we'll hash it out.
It's just not funny. Troy, Paul.
What's wrong with Canada?
What's right with Canada?
You know, I just stopped. I stopped being mean to myself, and I found compassion for myself. And as I learned to be compassionate with myself, I learned to be more compassionate and empathetic towards others. And you know, recognizing your own humanity allows you. It's that old cliche saying of you can't love people more than you love yourself, and it's so true. And there's a book called Self-Esteem by McKay and Fanning that I highly recommend. Go check it out if you want a reading list. I've got a whole reading list set up, but I just think that mental health and emotional health is so, it's just not talked about in this day and age. People don't focus on it. And when you stop feeling like crap because you stop treating yourself like crap and you stop making bad decisions, and you start treating yourself well and you start treating yourself with respect, you start treating others with respect. You start demanding respect from others. And I think you heard that in episode 160. You know, you heard the emotional evolution of Richard as he, you know, spent 3 years in solitary confinement and became very comfortable with himself and just saying, I don't want to act out this way. I'm going to start inspiring others and start being a coach and encouraging people on the cell block.
A builder.
And instead of being the baddest dude on the block, he started becoming the essential guy on the block. And he became proud of himself because he started knitting his community together because he wasn't acting out. He started helping people and connecting with people. And I don't think that we can really grow as a society until we start getting to a point where we have this discussion. And, you know, men are emotionally crippled in this country, and women don't help. Women, the second a man shows an emotion or that they're an emotional male, they get turned off, they flee. And you're as much of the problem as the guy who won't tell you, I just don't know what he's thinking. He's like a mystery. It's because he's been trained by women to not tell you what he's thinking because the second we do, flee.
Operant conditioning.
Right.
Right, yeah.
So
yeah. Men are more emotional than women.
Yeah.
They just won't admit it.
Yeah, we just
men
keep it to ourselves.
Men live their lives as, what is the quote? Men go at this silent desperation.
Yeah. Silent desperation. Mm-hmm. Yep. And, you know, we've got to get to a point in society because, let's face it, it is a lot of men that are committing crimes. It is a lot of young black men that are committing crimes. A society full of pride. And you heard Richard say it in the last episode. When you have stripped me of all dignity, respect is all I've got left, and I will defend it to my last. And we have a portion of our society that has been stripped of their dignity, have been stripped of justice, they have been stripped of their humanity, and goddammit, you can't get so pissed off when they try to defend that last shred of self-respect that they want, that they will cling to. And, you know,
while preaching from your perch about why can't they just be civilized?
Right. You know, so I'm not a white privilege type of guy. That's not the type of podcast that we are. We're not a bunch of liberals, but you got to open your eyes and you've got to start saying things have to change because these human beings are hurting and this group of human beings is shooting this group of human beings and then that group of human beings is shooting back. What is causing this? Right. And instead of running to your little Facebook corner and defending your little group and your little tribe and trying to defend your little Fox News opinion and defend your little Think Progress opinion, just shut the fuck up and listen. Have a real conversation with
somebody. No one cares that you're right.
Right, yeah.
No one cares if you're right, you're wrong. No one cares.
You know, and that's why what we tried to do here is have conversations with people.
Mm-hmm. Many of votes have been lost pursuing correct.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. Trying to be right usually defeats the purpose and creates blowback that results in electoral loss.
Yep. Mm-hmm. So if you want to start working on yourself, and I'm not trying to be Dr. Oz here and be a self-help guru or anything.
Dr. Oz?
I have read Oprah, Dr. Phil. That's Dr. Phil.
Dr. Oz would tell you to eat sawdust and turtle shell or something.
Psyllium husks.
That's why he's got the barley.
So
the barley.
He's got a TV show, though.
Dr. Oz.
So I've got like a list of like 10 books that I've read that really helped me. If you want that, send me an email at editor@wearelibertarians.com or send me a Facebook message or message the page, and I'll be sure to send it to you. Thank you for listening. You guys are the best. We love our audience. And episodes like this, I think, are important. And I think that what you expect to hear on a libertarian podcast with a bunch of white dudes and Harry, that is...
For the record.
Is
Harry ain't nothing but a dark-skinned cracker.
Speaking of record.
Harry, you have no convictions, right?
I have never been arrested, never gone to jail.
All right.
I am a unicorn, yes.
Unicorns are white.
All right, well...
The dark side of the unicorn. Nice. Yes,
thank you guys for joining us here on this episode of We Are Libertarians. Please be sure to hit wearelibertarians.com. We're making improvements all the time. And please be sure to share this episode. I think this was fairly good, but as always, we promise...
to do better next time.
Hi, this is Chris Spangle. Can you hear how good I sound? I sound great. And you know why? It's because listeners like you go to wearelibertarians.com/wishlist and you help us purchase new equipment. And then we take that equipment and we hook it all up and then we sound really good. And the only thing that can possibly go wrong is if I forget to hit record one more time. So, if you want us to help... If you want us to... Listen, getting new equipment isn't going to make everything better. There's still going to be problems with people like me and talking into the microphone. But you can make us sound really good as we're messing up by going to wearelibertarians.com/wishlist and purchasing an item today. It helps us grow, it helps us do more, and it helps us make sound better. Make sound better? That doesn't even mean anything. Well, I'm still not giving up, and I hope you weren't either. So please, wearelibertarians.com/wishlist. Thank you for listening to the We Are Libertarians Network. Get our other shows at wearelibertarians.com.